Morning. So I wasn't raised in a family where church was a part of our weekly routine. So Christmas in my childhood was much more of a secular event. But I've always loved the white twinkly lights and the candles, the smell of evergreen wreaths and ornaments. When my mom died when I was a late teenager, I inherited most of my family's ornaments, and we kept adding to them, each one reminding me of a person or a time in our lives or a special memory. There's this one large sequin and macrame ornament that my grandmother made. She was very crafty. I'm pretty sure it was in the 70s. And then we have a Rwandan peace basket from the year that we didn't actually have a Christmas tree at all. And then there's one that I'm sure many of you have, which is the popsicle sticks making a star with the glitter and your third grade picture in the middle. So these ornaments are a daily reminder throughout the season of the people that we love and the memories that we cherish. Sometimes my husband is resistant to getting up into the cold, dusty attic to bring them down. But because they're big, heavy boxes and it's a narrow little walkway. But for me, I love unwrapping each one. It's kind of like I'm going back to a memory with that person who made it or that time that we were at this place. And so each one is kind of helps me transport into a wonderful memory. I had two grandmothers. I had Grandma Aggie, who was not formal. She was the one who made the sequin macrame. She was really into the fake flowers, ribbon, decoration throughout the house. So there were lots of homemade crafts. She always had a freezer full of fudge and Santa's Whiskers cookies and divinity. The four of us cousins would play games. We were all close in age. We would go on hikes. We were always laughing. And then my grandfather was hard of hearing but loved football. So there was always a football game on, blaring in the living room. And then the other side of my family, my grandma Marjorie lived in the Bay Area, and her house, it was much more formal. I remember one year we had Peking duck for Christmas dinner. Another time we had like this jelly molded ham thing with like it was very, very, it was much more formal and different. But I also, like, she played the piano and the organ, and so she taught me to play Silent Night on the organ, and they had this magical, what I thought was magical, it was like a little square with this penguin that went around on a pond, and I just thought that was the most amazing thing ever. She always had some sort of a symphony concert through PBS playing on the radio or the television. And then as I grew older, when I was away at college in Pennsylvania, I spent a Christmas with my aunt in New York. And I remember she said, we can make Christmas whatever we want. She invited a few friends over. And so we made dolmas, and we went and got the grape leaves, and we made the insert, and we wrapped them up, and we made salmon for dinner. And I just remember feeling so adult, sitting with her and her friends, discussing politics at the time. This is back in the 90s. And then my most recent Christmas that we just returned from on Christmas Day, we picked up my nephew after his first semester at college, and watching the three cousins laugh and tease and enjoy being together, and having some quiet moments, sitting with my sister-in-law drinking coffee in the morning in our pajamas. And what makes these stand out for me is that they were all times that I remained firmly in the present. I wasn't worrying about future. I wasn't regretting the past. And I wasn't thinking about work or any other things that were going on in my life. My mind has chosen these bright, twinkly lights, these candles and memories to associate with Christmas. Not my sadness that my brother I grew up with is not really my life, or the loss of loved ones, or worries about the future that we're creating for our children. These twinkly lights or candles are symbols of a bright star leading kings and shepherds towards a young family, a newborn baby full of hope, pushing King Herod's evil machinations into the darkness, and Jesus' ultimate sacrifice into a dimmer background, reminding us to be thankful of the hope for now, for the ones we love.
Growing up, my family lived pretty far from both sets of relatives, never less than a 9-hour drive from my father's parents, never less than a 9-hour flight from my mother's. So my parents created Christmas traditions that reflected both of their families. We ate home baking that my father's mother mailed to us, ginger snaps and nut-filled pastries. And in keeping with my mother's traditions, we lit candles on our Advent wreaths every night, and we sang carols in English and in German. My parents also invented new traditions for us. It became customary every year for my siblings and I to write and perform a play about the Christmas story for our parents and any Christmas Eve guests. I was the oldest of four, so I pretty much jumped at the chance to produce, direct, write, and star in my own play every year and boss my siblings around. They were, of course, the supporting actors as needed. One year, I played an older Mary recounting the events of that first Christmas, and I spent the whole time trying to balance a Brita pitcher of water on my head, because that was my defining image of ancient womanhood, was women at the well, like carrying pitchers of water on their head. Another year, my sister Johanna played the angel of the Lord, and the two of us thought it would be really hilarious for her to jump out in front of Mary and Joseph and yell boo before proceeding to the more scripturally sound dialogue, "Do not be afraid," which is a bit contradictory, but we enjoyed it. And then almost a decade ago, I met and I married Aaron, and I came to know his family's Christmas traditions. I got to enjoy all the same cookies that his mother makes every year, and our tree is covered with ornaments that she has handmade for us, a different one every year since Aaron was born. And since I joined the family, one for me too. Even after we moved nearly 1,000 miles away from both of our families to go to grad school, our schedules were flexible enough to allow us several weeks off at Christmas. So we would pile into the car and make the drive in one very long day, and then cram in as much time as possible with our families. We'd see how much our nieces and our nephew had grown since we last saw them. We'd spend Christmas Eve with my family and then drive an hour and a half to Aaron's parents to spend Christmas morning with them. And we'd exchange gifts, and we'd sing songs, and we'd watch movies, and generally eat way too much food. Every Christmas I remember is a joyful one. I'm sure there were moments of tension. I can recall almost none of them. This Christmas, however, has been bittersweet, because it marks the very first time in both of our lives that Aaron and I have not gone home to our families to celebrate the holiday. And there have been a lot of moments of joy. Don't get me wrong. We've enjoyed the chance to rest properly over the break, to establish our own new tradition as a family of two. We have loved spending the holiday here with you at PMC, and we've been really grateful to touch base with our families over the phone and on Skype. But I've also given myself permission not to shy away from the sadness. I grieve all the little ways that I wish I could be present, but I can't. I wish I could have a dance party with my nieces. My sister is 7 months pregnant for the first time, and I wish I could feel her baby move the way that my parents and my siblings have. I grieve the missed opportunities to share meals and do dishes together, to rush and to rest together, to sing and to celebrate as a family. As my life has shifted, different elements of the Christmas story have resonated with me. And so this year, I find myself thinking of Mary and Joseph, alone and afraid, fleeing with Jesus to Egypt, separated from their families under infinitely more traumatic circumstances than mine, without even access to Skype or to phone plans that make long-distance calling affordable. I think of the families even here and now who, like me, are immigrants to this country, but whose experience of immigration has been far more painful and far more fraught and far less safe than mine. And I grieve, and I hope, and I pray, and I work for the reign of God to come, for God's will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. Because what is Advent if not a time to ponder our desperate need for God? And what is Christmas if not a reminder that God has not and will not leave us alone?